Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Klug, joined, as always, in studio by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And boys, I am back in my home studio today. Big R took the red eye out of San Francisco, back from his church plant in the Hyatt Place Hotel, back to what we loosely refer to as home base for Big R. So he's back in studio. And Pipe, you're where you always are, in Nashville. So it's good to be back, boys, and it's good to be back like doing this thing for real. You know, in the fashion that we've grown accustomed to. Now, Pipe, in that fashion, we have business to take care of because we have two sponsors for today's program. So why don't you lay those on us, and then we're going to talk about Live in Louisville, and then we're going to talk about some controversial stuff. We're going to have some hot takes for people. So lay the business on us. Let's get that done, and then we'll move on.
All right. So we've got two different sponsors for this episode. Because that's what we do. And since, you know, it's been a little bit chaotic this summer, people traveling around, some odd episodes, but now we are back in the saddle and the money is rolling in. So the first sponsor is Nav Press, and they come with a book called Eats with Sinners by Aaron Chambers. And I did notice on this one, it's A-R-R-O-N. That's how he spells his name, which is, I don't know. I always notice weird spellings. Maybe it's because I have a weird name. But Aaron Chambers with two R's and one A.
Hmm. Dude, that sounds like a millennial spelling. Is Aaron Chambers a young man?
You know, I didn't actually look him up. I was trying not to be have any preconceived notions.
Oh.
He's a pastor of Journey Christian Church with a name like Journey. I would have guessed
that's
like
a young
Gen
man
X.
Church.
Yeah, but more maybe more Gen X than millennial. And it's in Greeley, Colorado. So Colorado's... It's also a young people state. So, I'm guessing he's sub 45, maybe sub 40.
You know, I'm looking him up. That's what I do.
All right. You Google him. And so you can give us the impression of who it is we are describing here. The subtitle is, so it's Eats with Sinners, and then it's just Loving Like Jesus. I'll also say this book has a great cover. Since this is an audio medium, I'm not going to bother to describe it. You can go look it up on Amazon or at Nav Press's website. But it's a very nice classic cover. It's not sort of kitschy Christian crap covers. But the whole premise of the book is just that every meal Jesus ate, he ate with sinners. So it's not a book about evangelism over meals, like inviting people into your home per se, as much as it is how sharing meals with people and that sort of common experience opens doors for conversation with fellow believers who are also sinners like us, or in an evangelistic context. So it's a practical walkthrough of those things. But I thought the concept was really interesting because when I first saw the cover, I was certain that this was like a how to do evangelism over a meal, like inviting people into your home, that kind of thing. And it's more than that. It's much more just a how to use that common experience to connect with people in genuine conversation and in kind of breaking down barriers and opening up doors that might not otherwise be open. I think it looks like a really good practical book. It's not real long. And this was a really popular sermon series they did at their church. Some of the reviews and the endorsements on Amazon said that this was life-changing and very moving to people. So, I'm always intrigued by a book that takes something that Jesus did and figures out how to model after it, considering that seems sort of like the essence of Christ-likeness. So, Eats with Sinners, Loving Like Jesus by Aaron Chambers is the name of the book. It is available now. You can get it at Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it probably Lifeway.com, any of those particular places where one buys books. Ted, any feedback on this young pastor gentleman?
Yeah, two things, man. Number one, the book actually sounds really fresh, man. It sounds like a cool concept. I'm excited to check that out, truly. Number two, Mr. Chambers is actually an older gentleman.
What?
Who looks kind of spry and young. You know what I mean? So in that Colorado way, in that sort of like plaid shirt way.
Yeah.
He's a
real healthy and outdoorsy.
And outdoors. I was just going to say that. He looks like a jogger, but not the kind of jogger that just like jogs on the road. He like jogs on trails. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got like those impressive calf muscles.
Yeah. Big calves. Big like ropey calves, man. That's what we're looking at vis-a-vis Chambers. Skinny everywhere else, though.
But right. Yeah. Lean. Big calves. Wiry.
So
he's got a wire strength. Yeah. Well, I'm glad he's not a young guy because
me too. I'm sick of young guys, man.
They're the worst.
They are the worst.
but also because it's just good to see. I prefer to be taught by somebody who's been there before me. I'm not as impressed being taught by people who are like 2 years ahead of me. So
with
the fact
you.
That he
totally
is a little bit more experienced, I think lends credence to this book.
I agree.
So ropey calves, lean, Aaron Chambers, eats with Jesus. Or, I'm sorry, eats with sinners, love like Jesus.
Eats with Jesus, whatever.
Eats with Jesus, that's our book. That's the book we're getting ready to write.
Eats with Jesus is the Lord's Supper every Sunday if you go to certain churches, once a quarter if you go to other churches. So, but we do have another sponsor, and I'm going to take a slight left turn into this one. And this is Waterbrook Multnomah. And the book that they are highlighting is Never Settle for Normal, The Proven Path to Significance and Happiness by Jonathan Parnell. And I actually know Jonathan Parnell. He worked for Desiring God, actually still does, as one of their editorial guys. He is also the pastor of Cities Church in Minneapolis, which is a church plant of the church I grew up in. He's a really good guy, super smart, super thoughtful, super like a genuine loving, genteel guy. So somebody who you could trust. And the premise of the book is it's not an uncommon one, but it's one that I think we need periodic reminders of. Basically looking at what is it that gives people purpose in everyday life? And he talks about how we settle for what he calls stupid normal. So just sort of we try to find over significance in the mundane and the meaningless and the empty in life. And so he speaks the gospel into those aspects of life. He's a father of, I think, 5 kids, although it might be more. I feel like every time I get on Facebook, he has another child. So
the Reform gestation period is only 6 months. So it's everything is accelerated right. In the Reform church.
And yes. And if you homeschool, I think it bumps it down to 5 or 5.5. Absolutely. I don't know if they do or not, but it's possible. But that means that his life is full of the mundane and the normal. And so significance in that concept takes on a different face. I think that's the life that a lot of us lead. You know, very few people get to do what Ronnie does and jet set all over the United States to plant churches in
a high place.
Hotels. So yeah. Since we can't all be Ronnie, let's all read Never Settle for Normal by Jonathan Parnell.
Wow.
And I think we'll find more significance. Ronnie, you can skip this one because you have your significance in many
traveling
things.
I've already achieved, guys. I've already achieved significance. So there's no sense in looking for something that's already.
What's it like on that side of the Great Divide? There's having
book,
achieved it.
Yeah,
significance on the other side of the Great Divide. Is that too long of a title, or should I shorten that a little bit? Or
it blends kind of. Personal meaning with a puritanical title. So I don't know. That sounds a lot like you.
Yeah. Or just like call a book like Arrived.
Ooh.
Arrived.
You love those one word titles. Arrived.
They're so early 2000.
Dude, they're very mysterious, aren't they, Pipe?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much intrigue in a one word title.
There is. It can go anywhere.
You know what? I was thinking about Ronnie's persona as it pertains to Live in Louisville, which is another event that we should promote.
Wow. Yes.
Coming up on October 22nd, we're doing a live event in Louisville, taping some eps, hanging out with some fans. And I wondered, Pipe, if we could get like an official Live in Louisville like conference lanyard in honor of Ron's conference attending. I would hate for people to go away without a lanyard related to our very own event.
See, you know what I think we should do instead is I think Ronnie should bring all of his lanyards from all of his – so everybody there gets a Ronnie Martin lanyard from one of the 140 different conferences he's been to in the last
year. Dude,
years.
I used to buy like game-used jerseys on eBay. It would be like a conference-used lanyard.
Yeah, conference-used lanyard. And he could – I mean, people could get it autographed.
Absolutely.
He'll come Sharpie in hand.
Oh, dude, it's going to be vintage lanyards. I probably only charge about anywhere from 25 to 40 bucks a pop for them. So, Just come loaded with cash. Come stock.
I mean, our boys probably got, 400 or 500 lanyards? I mean, you could sell half of those and still be fine. Still have your souvenirs, you know.
Yeah, it'll fund me another church at Hyatt P.
Still have something to show your grandkids, you know, all your lanyards.
Yeah. They're all limited edition, though, because they're all unique. So it's not just – like this is the one that he wore – on April 12th at the Gospel Coalition. Like, this is not, you can't find this anywhere. No other Ronnie Martin wore it's this. Big. No other person wore Ronnie it's Martin's big. Lanyard.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, the conferences themselves aren't at all unique, but the lanyards no. are.
They're all exactly the same, but well, yeah. Ronnie's special touch on those lanyards.
Yeah, the lanyards are pretty similar too, but it is the fact that that I'm giving you the lanyard that was literally just
around your
neck. My neck for four straight days. Actually, you know what's interesting about my lanyard wearing boys is I'm a little anti. So I always stick the lanyard in my back pocket and have the string come out of it and hang.
Oh yeah, you're a back pocket guy. Kind of like I don't do with that chain wallet. That's kind of what you're
doing. Did you guys think that I actually wore those things around my neck? That is never going to happen. I am never going to be a neck wearing lanyard.
What are you, a farmer? Of course not.
Right, exactly. I mean, let's just set that straight right now. And what's going to happen is when we have our lanyards at our event, baby, I want everybody to put them in their back pocket. I want to see those strings dangling down to their calf.
To their ropey calf. Super reminiscent of the chain, the wallet chain, which was like super chic like about, what, 15, 20 years
popular
ago?
Popular back in 1999, correct.
Yeah.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Which was the year that the three of us really, like, peaked in life, let's be honest. I mean, which is kind of why we're so obsessed with it. But hey, if it works, why change it? You know what I mean? And speaking of change, boys, this is an interesting segue into our first topic and what I feel will probably be the main topic for the show today. Eugene Peterson. This was a big deal. Eugene Peterson is a pastor, theologian, famous pastor, he did the message, right? I got the right guy, right?
That's the one.
Did the message. He was interviewed by Jonathan Merritt, who's well known in, I guess, Christian circles for controversial articles, right?
Let's call it stirring the pot.
Stirring the pot. The kind of things that that people click on because they're intrigued by the title. I think it's safe to say that.
If the title is not reflective of the content.
There's another word for what that is, Pipe, and I'm very coy about that. I'm being very coy about trying to avoid the other term for what we call that kind of article. But anyway, he's famous.
Maybe reflective of sensationalism a bit.
He's famous for that kind of article. I think it's safe to say that. So he dropped an article recently in which Eugene Peterson said that he would be good with performing a gay marriage, and then he took it back the next day. So that's where we're at. That happened. It like blew up the internet. It blew, and by that I mean the Christian internet. Blew up the Christian internet. People went berserk over it. So Pipe, I want to lay this on you first as a kind of marketing guy. You know, you make your living in the Christian, you know, book marketing business. How does this hit you on that level?
Okay. So I have to be a little bit careful here because, I work for a company that runs multiple Christian bookstores as well as a significant online retailer. And the decision was made when he made that statement to go through the process of not selling his books until it was resolved. Mm-hmm. I believe, I don't know all the details. I didn't dig into it too much. And I don't know if that has been changed or reversed in any way, but I mean, it creates a significant challenge for a Christian, like a Christian retailer or a publisher who has a standard that's different than that. So if there's a written or outspoken standard that marriage is between one man and one woman and same-sex marriage is not, you know, is not biblical, well then we've now got a bit of an issue. I think it probably put his publishers in a tough spot because I'm sure that there's probably mixed feelings within the staff at those publishers. I think, I know that he published with Nav Press, which then became part of Tyndale, I think, if I'm getting my publishers correct. And I know Tyndale is a pretty conservative publisher. Like they have worked very hard to maintain biblical orthodoxy and probably put them in a tough spot. But then he comes out and reverses his statement the next day, which means, I guess technically you can kind of let it all blow over, but, yeah, it's from a marketing perspective, there's also the all publicity is good publicity, which means I bet millions of people heard about some of his books or went and Googled them and who had never heard of them before. So that's, I don't know, maybe it gave sales a bump. I'm not sure.
Well, I'm pretty sure Jonathan Merritt subscribes to the all publicity is good publicity, you know, credo as well. So, this is kind of par for the course for him. So I think it was a pretty exciting day in in his offices, I'm guessing, when all this controversy hit. So, you know, I use the word, you know, use the term winner loosely there with, you know, if we call this winning, generating.
I think if you subscribe to the all publicity is good publicity sort of model of marketing, winner is always loose, because
That's true.
It's sort of the coffee is for closers mentality. There's not a lot of substance behind that.
Ligaris Roasters coffee is for closers. Let's just say it that way.
And listeners, and it's on sale, so go get it.
That's right.
HappyRantPodcast.com.
Gosh, that's good radio. Gosh. So smooth. Big R, you're a man of the cloth, as is Eugene Peterson. What do you make
of it? You guys are so similar, except that you love the internet more.
Me and Eugene. I'm doing that symbol with my fingers right now that shows that we are together.
You know? That wraparound.
Me and EP. Me and EP. Yeah. You know? Dude, I don't know, man. I'm just still really confused about a lot of it, because so let's get into this for a sec, right? So he makes some comments. He makes some comments that would take him out of, you know, what we think is, you know, historical, traditional orthodoxy. And then the next day, he kind of reverses his, you know, his opinion on those things, his stance on those things. So I guess, I'm going to answer your question with a question, which is what do we do with that? Because, again, this is a guy that just announced that the last book that just came out last month is going to be his final book. He's staying out of the public eye now. He's retired, in essence. No more speaking engagements. He's just going into total retirement, traditional retirement as we think of it. So what was the impetus for him to make a statement to Merit and then reverse the statement the next day? I feel like there's a gap there that we'll never be able to understand or know about unless he does a follow-up interview. And if he stays out of the, if he really does retire, we're never going to get that follow-up interview. But like, where are you guys at with that? Like, what happened in that 24 hours, besides the fact that all of Orthodox, traditional, you know, evangelicalism literally just started freaking out and hot taking him to death?
Yeah, what just happened? Completely wrote him off as if he had come out and said Jesus isn't Lord or something. It was.
I bet he got way more pumped to retire in that 24 hours. And I bet he wished he had retired about 2 weeks sooner.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. But
retired, I mean, like 24 hours prior to that.
Here, let me add to my question with that. Now, is this a guy? I mean, you know, I know it's easy to talk about the old dudes like they're just not social media savvy, but these guys got people working with them and for them that lead them down those paths the way they need to go. I mean, did he really not think, as a leader in the evangelical world, that this was not going to ruffle feathers?
My impression is, this is probably going to sound like a hot take, because everything sounds like a hot take.
Well, this is a podcast. We are hot taking.
Right? Okay, this is what we do. So my impression is, in response to what you just said, I don't think he has like handlers. I don't think he's not on social media. He doesn't write anywhere on the internet. He has made a career out of staying out of the public eye. Like, his publishing success is an anomaly because he's the anti-platform builder.
Good for him, man, on that.
When he pastored, he's retired from the pastor, but when he pastored, he didn't pastor a mega church.
Yeah.
He pastored like a normal sized church. I think it was a few hundred people, you know, somewhere between 200 and 700 people. So like mid-sized, smaller church. And then he's also been out of like ministry controversy for a number of years. He's mid-80s. And he even said this he basically was like, I've never been confronted with this issue in real life. And so his answer was sort of based on a hypothetical. And then when he came back around to rescind it, he was like, I wish I hadn't made that comment. And in thinking about it, I don't know that I would do what I said I would do yesterday. Uh-huh. And so it was almost like, so Ronnie, as a pastor, I suppose you probably think about this with some regularity. If somebody came, you know, attended your church or came into the church and said, hey, would you consider doing this? You kind of have to have your answer ready.
Right.
Maybe you dread that question. Maybe you're rocking and rolling. You're ready for, you know, that question. But he hasn't been confronted with that question.
Yeah.
Nobody's asked him to do a wedding in like 20 years.
Yeah.
So there's 20 years ago, nobody was asking to do gay weddings. So I think there is an element where he was probably caught off guard. He may also not be somebody who loves the tap dance of a controversial interview. Like, you have to know when you're going into an interview with Jonathan Merritt, he's gonna ask a question in the hopes of you giving a controversial answer.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think when you bring it back around to Merritt and Merritt doing his meritorious thing. Guys, did I just coin something?
Did I just coin something?
That's a whole different meaning of meritorious.
All right. So I guess the thing is that what we're trying to do right now, which I don't think is a bad thing, is we're trying to give him the benefit of the doubt that legitimately his back was put up against the wall. He wasn't expecting the question. He answered quickly without giving it much thought. But I mean, is that like, I think that's the gracious thing to do, and I think we should do that. But since we're talking about it, can we back up just like a foot and go, like, is that really something that he's never considered and never thought about?
Well, and also, even if he hadn't considered it, there's an element of if his knee-jerk reaction is to say yes to that question, what does that mean? So if this is the first time he's sort of had that question posed to him and his gut response is, yes, I would do it. Now, is that a reflection of having been in the PCUSA? Is that a reflection of his beliefs about marriage? Not if you take his day two answer where he says, that's not what I believe about marriage. So there's – at some point, I just have to look at it and go – I don't know what those questions and answers were about. Like, I don't know what he was trying to say on day one when he said he would do it, or day two when he said he wouldn't. But I have a really hard time writing off everything else he's ever written, which seems to be what a lot of people wanted to do. Like, right. I think people were ready to burn a long obedience in the same direction because of this one interview.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that's problematic because if we're going to start doing that, then we have to burn everything John MacArthur's done. We got to burn everything that Luther wrote because he freaked out at the end of his life. We got to burn everything that Calvin wrote because he had issues with certain things that we would have, you know, massive disagreements with. So it's like, yeah, I don't think we take one thing and just completely write off just a, you know, a lifetime's worth of faithful work. You know what I mean? I mean, and again, it doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that even if he would have made the comment and not stepped from it the next day that he wouldn't have next year or 5 years from now or on his deathbed. I mean, you know, however we want to go through that, I think what was lacking with the hot takes was any measure of grace from people that are all about the doctrines of grace. Boom.
Oh, the doctrine of grace and giving grace have nothing to do with each other, Ronnie. If you've learned anything in the Reformed Church, you should know that.
Well, thanks, Pipe. Thanks for that hot take on the doctrines of grace.
Dude, a hot take on Ronnie's hot take, man. We're hot taking each other.
We're stacking hot takes.
Hey, can you add to that hot take, Big T? I want your hot take now.
I got a hot take. I'm going to hot take it in a little bit different direction.
I'd like some hot cakes right now. Like if we were all sitting together, that I would like to stop hot taking and start hot caking.
Well, I'm gonna beg a question to both of you gentlemen, and maybe I'll throw this to Pipe first because he's more of a sports guy, but. This Eugene Peterson marriage controversy got me thinking about what other Peterson would you rather have perform your wedding ceremony? And I'm gonna throw you two Petersons.
Now the question is this ceremony to somebody of the same gender as me or somebody of a different gender than me, or does that not have anything? Does that not matter?
It doesn't matter, but let's just say someone of a different gender, so as not to arouse controversy on this program and bring
yes.
the internet to a halt with all the dialogue that would come in the wake of it.
Yeah, we can only stack so many hot takes. So anyway, back to your question.
Exactly. People's heads are going to explode. It's going to be out of control. So my two Petersons are as follows. Adrian Peterson, longtime running back for your favorite team, the Minnesota Vikings. He's now a New Orleans Saint, but you will remember him as a Viking.
Always.
Or Norm Peterson from my favorite TV show, Cheers. Norm was the guy, the portly gentleman who sat at the end of the bar. Norm. So thinking through your wedding ceremony, who would you rather have perform it, Adrian Peterson or Norm Peterson?
Man. I feel like Norm would do a better job than Adrian. I think, Adrian Peterson, more known for, I would say, fumbling the football, running people over, not so much his eloquence.
Yeah.
And also, he managed to stir up some controversies with his own missteps behavior-wise, in terms of his treatment of his own children. And I'm not sure that that's the vibe I would want to bring into a wedding. No,
so
matter
you don't do what, the premarital counseling with Adrian Peterson, is what.
Yeah, or yeah. Parental counseling. And Norm, while he may lack a certain sort of aura that one would expect from a wedding officiant.
Right.
I think he's got a personality that's at least likable. He would put a smile on people's face, and I suspect he would keep it brief, which everybody likes in a wedding.
Absolutely. Normie would be excited to get through the wedding and just get to the beer at the reception.
I was going to say, and he would make that reception a good old time.
Absolutely. All right, Big R, I'm going to throw you two other Petersons. I'm going to have one Peterson carryover from pop culture. So Norm Peterson from Cheers is on your list as well. The other Peterson for you is Sloane Peterson, who is Ferris Bueller's girlfriend on Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Quintessential kind of 80s movie. So if you remember Sloane Peterson, the actress was Mia Sara. So the character Sloane Peterson or Norm Peterson, who's officiating Big R's wedding? And keeping in mind, like, Big R's wedding would have a certain aesthetic. It would be in a barn. This is a hipster wedding, a full-on hipster wedding.
Yeah, so hold on. What are you asking about Sloane Peterson? I'm lost.
I'm asking you, which Peterson would you rather have officiate your wedding, Sloane Peterson or Norm Peterson?
Oh, dude. I mean, I've never seen Cheers, so I have to go with Sloane.
Oh, baby.
I have a question. Yeah. Would that cause issues with this hypothetical person you are marrying? Because I have to assume that at one point you had a mad crush on Sloane Peterson.
Me?
Well, both of you, but yes.
I mean, I wasn't. I hate to ruin everybody's like dream of being like the quintessential 80s guy, but like I wasn't like a big Ferris Bueller guy. Like I saw that movie in the 90s. Like,
right. We're talking about you being a Sloane Peterson guy, not a Ferris Bueller guy.
Yeah, I know, but
that's a separate issue that we were trying not to get into.
But I'm saying, what you're doing right now, you're becoming the Jonathan Merritt.
You're trying to be meritorious with me right now, and I don't appreciate that, like, literally on any level.
Dude, the headline for this would be, you know, Ronnie Martin crush on, you know, Sloane Peterson.
Big T, what's up, man? First pipe hot takes my hot take, and now he's meritoriousing me to death. Is there some level of like animosity going on here because I've been in California all week?
Maybe he's trying to back you into a corner, and it's working.
I know.
You're getting
it.
Wait, and you just flew in from where? San Francisco?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're planting a church in the Hyatt Place out there, are you?
Guys, I'm typing in my resignation right now for the rant. This is too much pressure for me. Yeah, I'm going to go with Sloane over Norm. I don't even know who Norm is.
Wow, female efficient. There you go. That's controversial.
You would recognize Norm if you saw Norm.
I'm sure I would, but it doesn't ring a B. So,
wow. Baby, you would like Cheers. You should watch it,
dude. That was one of those situation comedies that was off limits in the Martini household growing up. You know,
interesting.
Because you know, I grew up in a
Dude, I forget that you grew up in kind of a fundy household, man. That always kind of takes me aback, as it were.
Was it Calvary Chapel? Was that sort of the banner of influence? The banner over you was Calvary?
Yeah, the banner over me was Chuck Smith, Greg Laurie, yes. And Calvary Chapel. Indeed it was. Yeah.
Interesting.
So,
interesting.
Again, it wasn't their fault that we weren't allowed to watch either, and I quote, the Smurfs or Cheers. But wow. that was down to Mom and Pop Martin.
No Smurfs.
My mother had an issue with the Smurfs as well. And I don't think it was because there was like 72 dudes and one woman. I think it had more to do with witchcraft.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was. And when you go back,
72 dudes and one woman. It sounds like the first Gospel Coalition comp a few years ago.
It sounds like the Gospel Coalition comp 4 months ago. But
Yeah.
I was going to say that is the same ratio. It's just gotten bigger.
72,000 dudes and one woman.
Yeah, Pipe, I never figured out the Smurfs thing because if you look back on it now, and I'm not saying like any time recently you've like gone back and watched a Smurfs ep because I haven't either. But like
I have two children who are of Smurf watching age, so I have. they haven't aged well. They're
well, hold on, man. You're watching – they're watching vintage Smurfs?
Oh, for real.
Not like the new school whatever, the CGI.
The new school ones are – I mean they've seen the new school movies. They're like next level stupid. But but the original ones, which are sort of the classics, are also pretty terrible.
Well, yeah, I was going to say like the originals were not exactly non-first level stupid, you know. So, but But yes, but I mean, like, what was the fuss, right? I mean, like, you watch it now and you go, oh my gosh, like, I don't even know what they're talking. I can't even understand what they're saying, much less like what the message is behind all of it, right?
I was gonna say, the fact that I was allowed to watch like Tom and Jerry, where there's just egregious violence against animals, was fine.
Dude, somehow
but not a cartoon wizard named Gargamel who wants to destroy little blue creatures who I knew without a question of a doubt didn't exist.
I don't know why. We got to talk about this on a future app, boys, but somehow growing up in very conservative Christian households, I, for the life of me, I don't know why violence always was G-rated for us. It's like literally R-rated violence, they moved down into the G category for us. Like, and I have no idea why that was. I mean, it was any kind of violence was okay.
Oh yeah, it's like the first Terminator movie was like, oh, you just got to fast forward that one little scene, but then by all means watch people just get decapitated.
Yeah, like
the
that
rest
was
of the
okay.
movie is gold.
Yeah, I mean, again, conservative Christianity is pro-violence. It's weird,
dude. You know what? Yeah. I do the same things with my kids, though. To be honest, just to be completely honest.
Well, because that was that's how you learned. Big
that team. Was my experience. Yeah, that's how I learned. Absolutely. Boys, let's use that as a bridge, a little segue, because I think it's appropriate. I think it's apropos to go into a bit that we've done on this program before. This is a Barnabas Piper invention. It's called "What Are People Even Doing?" And I feel like my performance in this bit has been a little bit of a disappointment in the past, but. I actually have one for this segment. So, Pipe, since this is your bit, this is your recurring thing, I'm going to throw it to you first. What are people even doing?
All right. I keep a list of these just to give you a little sneak behind the curtain of my personality. Uh-huh. I jot down notes as I watch people do things that make me go, what are people even doing? So the first one, and I just saw this last week, what's with grown human beings wearing pajamas on airplanes?
Dude, that's
what,
so
what
true.
Are people even doing? Like flannel pajama pants, Mickey Mouse sweatshirts. Like I've seen people carry like teddy bears. Like this is a mode of transportation. This is not like your playpen where you go curl up with your blankie and take a nap.
Oh, dude, so true. And you know what's funny about that? You look at like, you know, old movies. You watch like an old Cary Grant, Audrey Hepburn movie from the 50s or 60s. People dressed up, man. People like put on suits to get on the plane. It was an event. And now it's like, you're right. It's a glorified bus station playpen. It's a mess what people are wearing onto the plane.
I mean, it's making me miss the days of velour sweatsuits where like retiree ladies would show up in like teal matching velour,
right.
like running suits, which were hilariously. But like, at least they were clothing.
Right.
Not,
even that
not
seems
pajamas.
Like hella classy compared to what's going on now.
You know? Right, yeah. You just want to give them a high five. Like, way to go. You put on clothes
way
today.
To get dressed like a grown-up. Good job, you know?
Ronnie, did you see pajamas on your red-eye flight?
Yeah, it seems like women are the ones that typically do it more than dudes, though. So I noticed that they wear kind of those faux pajamas, you know, those Fauxx pajamas where they can be sort of like you're kind of think like you're not really sure. You kind of think they're pajamas and you're like, wait, but wait, are those just workout pants? But then as in close, you know, on closer inspection, you're like, no, I'm pretty sure those are PJs. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
there was some of that. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was some of that going on last night. I'm not going to lie to you.
Baby, did you ever wear pajamas on the plane yourself?
I would never wear pajamas on a plane.
You wouldn't.
I mean,
even
wear.
They have like little like faux military jacket pajamas, like kind of structured like that. Would you ever wear those?
I mean, believe it or not, man. When I'm around people that I don't know and I don't care about, you know, who I don't care about, you know, seeing me how I really look. Yeah. I mean, I wear the most comfortable clothes known to man. Like last night, I was wearing a pair of like sweat shorts. You know, like I just didn't care because it was going to be a long night. You know what I mean? So.
And therein lies the difference between men and women. Because what are sweatshorts but basically pajamas? It's just that the difference for men between like workout gear and pajamas is
– it's a fine line.
Nothing.
Yeah.
It's really nothing unless like one of them is dry fit.
That's
Whereas
true.
For women, it's like, no, those are flannel pajama pants. They're plaid and you have slippers on.
Dude, they're plaid. That's, they say Victoria's Secret. They're flannel pajama pants is what they are.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big R, what about you? What are people even doing, man, in your life? What have you noticed lately?
Gosh, dude, I just, Man, I just freeze up whenever you guys talk about this. This is not...
I texted it to you 15 minutes before the show so you could get good and worked up about
something.
It's
like when somebody asks me, what are you listening to right now? Like, literally, like, every record I've bought in the last, like, 2 months, like, just evaporates from my memory. I don't...
maybe that's the what are people doing. Maybe you're tired of people asking what you're listening to.
You know what? Why don't you roll with that one for me, Big T? I like that. Yeah, that's
right.
Good.
So you're the music guy. You've got this past where you did music and... You know, you feel like now all anybody ever does is ask you what you're listening to, and you know, they don't care, really, and you don't want to talk about it, and let's just be done. Let's be done
That's it, Big T. I love that. Stop asking me what I'm listening to because, you know, I don't even care what I'm listening to.
Exactly.
I don't care. Right. They don't care. I don't care. You don't care. Pipe doesn't care.
I really don't care.
I mean, yeah, it just doesn't – like, literally, what does it matter what I'm listening to?
Right. And it's like if they want you to recommend a record, like never before has it been easier to access all kinds of music. Just go know what you like to listen to and just go listen to stuff that sounds like that.
But baby, that's such a great point because I feel like if somebody would ever phrase it to me that way and just say, hey, Big R, recommend me something that you think I should listen to. I feel like something in my brain might click with that, and then I would have some memory about a record I just listened to. I'd say, oh, yeah, I was just listening to that record. Buy that record. But when they say, like, it's almost like when somebody walks up and they say, so, dude, how have things been going? And it's like I have no capacity to know how to answer that question.
How have things been going? That's terrific. That's a great one.
So stop asking me that. Like, be specific. I just need specifics in my life. That's what I need right now.
Okay, so everybody, listeners, be specific with Ronnie. If you encounter him at Live in Louisville, which you should encounter him at because it's only $10, go to happyrampodcast.com, grab your tickets.
And you got plenty of time to get babysitters and whatever else. I mean, it's 3 months away, so book your ticket now and get there.
Yeah, and start writing down, as we just pointed out, kids, very specific questions, because we have the right to refuse any question we don't want to answer on the basis that it's too broad and too, so how you doing?
Dude, you know what's going to happen? We're going to open it up for Q&A and somebody's going to raise their hand and go like, how's it been going for you guys?
Yeah, because we have smart aleck listeners, which we really appreciate.
Which we actually appreciate. Yeah.
Which, not the question.
And to which we will say next question, please. No
that's
comment.
Right. Yeah, we will laugh no comment. And move on.
No yeah, it's going to be insane. It's
going to
be insane.
My what are people even doing? It's similar to yours, Pipe, in that it concerns like adult behavior. So let me paint a picture for you. Dinner context, right? You're spending time with adults. Maybe you're spending time like with adults that you've been spending time with for a few days. And there's always that one dude who has the culinary palate of like a toddler. And he always requests like his own special meal. You know what I mean? Like if you're having...
Are you like out to dinner or like somebody is hosting it?
Somebody's hosting, right? So somebody's cooking for the group. And, you know, the food's not exotic by any stretch of the imagination, but there's always a dude that wants to eat like a four-year-old. He wants like a French bread pizza. You know what I mean? Or he wants like a...
Can I do mac and cheese with hot dogs cut up in it?
Dude, he wants mac and cheese with hot dogs cut up in it. You know? And it's
like... just bad manners though? Like not eating what...
That's what I'm saying. I don't have any problem with that food. If you want to eat mac and cheese and hot dogs, that's fine. It's actually kind of good. But like... if you're at an adult like dinner context with some other people, like just eat what they put in front of you. You know what I mean? And I'm not talking about gluten-free, intolerant, any of that stuff. I'm talking about just like culinary toddlerhood. You know what I mean?
That's a product of parents who didn't tell their kids to eat what was put in front of them.
Dude,
I think so.
This is where like the parents would make dinner and then they would make like mac and cheese for the kid instead of being like, no, you are also going to eat the chicken marsala or whatever it is.
They'd always give the kid his own option, you know, or you could have this little guy.
You're going to have a PB&J with the crust cut
off.
Like,
dude, you realize like that is the most I'm going to get in trouble right now, but like that is literally the most like common thing right now with how parents are raising their kids. Like,
dude,
it always has separate meals. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like homes come with kid menus now.
Totally, man.
So
totally.
It's like, I'll have the veal parmesan. They'll have the chicken tenders.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit. So obviously you're not menuizing your kids.
No. I mean, if I'm going to make them chicken tenders or mac and cheese, it's because I'm going to eat it for dinner too. But doggone it, if we're going to someone's house, they're going to eat what's put in front of them. And I have this conversation before we go inside.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be like, I don't really know what they're going to make for dinner, but you're going to say thank you, and you're going to eat the serving of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you can like, I've told them before, because we've been to some people's houses who either aren't great cooks or they love like real gourmet stuff, which kids don't tend to love.
Yeah.
And I've told them, I'm like, if you're still hungry, we'll get a snack when we get home. You know, like, I promise you're not going to go to bed hungry, but you're going to be polite and you're going to eat it at the house. And I, thankfully my kids don't make a stink out of it. They don't like make, you know, they don't make faces or whatever. They'll just sort of nibble at it and then politely ask to be excused and go entertain themselves. So yeah,
no menu. Your kids are going to be decent adults though. They're not going to be obnoxious in this way. And I think it's a service to, you know, future dinner party attendees with your kids, because this
is a service. That's a great way to put it, too,
man.
But the thing is, like, this doesn't feel like exceptional parenting to me. This feels like
baseline.
What ought to be baseline parenting?
Yeah. Yep.
Because you're teaching your kids to be respectful to somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, baby, do you apply this to the boys?
Yeah, we absolutely apply it to the boys. And you know, my lady likes to cook.
Yeah, she's a good cook too.
She's a terrific cook. So she's trained them well in the. You know, I think for little guys, their palates are pretty refined, and you know, so they're able to go in and out of situations, and yeah, like Pipe's kids. I mean, they may not love every single thing that people put in front of them, but they're gonna eat it. They're gonna eat a portion. They're gonna say thank you. You know, they're not gonna demand like a toddler meal on the side. You know?
Yeah, it's a great way to teach your kids how to suffer. That it's not all about what they love. It's not all about their taste. Dude, it's literally like you're preaching to them. You literally are preaching the gospel to them when you make them eat what comes on their plate. I mean, it's
it really is. You know, and that's the book that I'm working on.
Hey, Pipe, did I just take it that far? I did.
You did.
I did.
I love what you did there. You know?
You can wedge the gospel
really
into
can.
All sorts of places that it wouldn't have.
No, I didn't wedge the gospel. Look at you, Pipe's coming at me again. I did not wedge the gospel.
He's trying to be all Jonathan Merritt with you. He's trying to talk you into a corner. Is what he's trying to do.
It's meritorious again, man. I did not wedge the gospel. That it's everything's a gospel issue. Uh-oh.
See, I would have gone an entirely different direction if I was going for a point of application with that, and would have said. It's opening your kids' eyes to other cultures and other experiences because you're teaching them to. So you go to somebody's house and they cook curry, or they cook they cook something that's, you know, more spicy Italian, or like,
which is what Jesus did when he went and ate with
sinners with green chili sauce or whatever. And you tell your kids you have to try this. You're not opening their minds and their palates to another experience. Yes, there's a gospel implication of that. There's also just a love your neighbor implication of that. So you're just proving
my point. I mean, Pipe, do you really think that Jesus loved what Nicodemus served that night?
Yes.
I don't think he did.
Like fish out of the Sea of Galilee, and I've seen the Sea of Galilee. It's gross.
I think that
Nicodemus cooked something just fantastic.
Pipe, I think maybe he didn't.
Loaded.
I think there's a great chance that maybe Jesus did not like what Nicodemus served that night, but because he loved Nicodemus and because he wanted to show him the hospitality of himself, of which we normally would say of Christ, he ate the food. And guess what? Nicodemus and all his household was saved.
Mm. And now we're back to our sponsor, and the book is Eating with Sinners. Or Eats with Sinners. I should get the title
correct. That's good radio right there, baby. What do you think about that?
Incredible radio.
You set that one right on a tee, Ron. That was really well done.
It actually reminds me of a piece that I'm working on for the Gospel Coalition blog called How Are We to Think About Dinner? And
how Christians think about kids.
How many points do you have on that one, Big T?
I've got 11 points. It's very clear. It's weighing in at about 9,000 words right now, which is kind of medium.
A little on the short side. A thousand
more and you've reached your minimum.
1,000 more, I've reached the minimum, and I'm hoping for thousands more in the comments section, really, because that's where the action happens. You know, for me, that's where I get excited with those articles. So, boys, this has been, this has been incredible. It's been insightful. You know, Ron has really lived up to his billing as the man of the cloth on this program. Don't you think, Pipe?
Oh, he came in uniform today, collar on and everything.
He's been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I imagine him sitting in his little minimalist studio there in A-Town in a clerical collar. That's what I'm looking at in my mind's eye.
You know? Well, I mean, it's a clerical collar that has like a couple like buttons up the top. It's like new school.
This studio is so minimalist. It's just like a white box, you know. There's nothing in it except Ron and a clerical collar. You can't even see the computer.
I've edited the clerical collars. You know, they've been a little too stodgy for too long.
You put your own spin.
I put my own spin on the clerical call.
It's a chambray. It's a chambray.
Oh, yeah, kind of a chambray collar. I like it, Pipe.
Right. Kind of looks like a bandana now. You know, going a little gang style with it, you know. So I have my like TGC pass hanging out of my pocket, and I got like my bandana clerical collar, you know, just keeping it real.
Going a little West Coast California grunge tip on the whole thing.
That's what happens. That's what happens when you spend a week in beautiful Cali, you know.
That's right. Boys, we have done what we always do on this program, which is to wander to and far, as Trogs used to say. We've also wandered to and fro. This has been fun, and until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Have you ever attempted to read the entire Bible? Did you do it, or did you only make it part way? I'm John Stonge, and I host a podcast that will make it possible for you to make it through the entire Bible, one chapter at a time. I've been hosting the Chapter a Day Audio Bible Podcast since 2015, and every single day of the week, I read one chapter of Scripture, then follow that up with a time of prayer. And if you're looking for daily insights and inspiration directly from God's Word, I hope you'll give the Chapter a Day Audio Bible a listen. You can find it at lifeaudio.com or on your favorite podcasting app.